everyone, and Merry Christmas. Joe and I are back this week with Steve Litchfield, as advertised. Hello, Steve. How are you doing?
Hello there. I'm very well. There's a few incidental noises in the background because it's nearly Christmas and I've got family around, but as long as you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're loud and clear.
Absolutely. I was just thinking that we could have done with some of Aidan Bell's bells at that point. Aidan's bells, and made sure everyone knew it was our Crimbo special. But welcome back, Steve. You went away on show, what was it, 865 or something?
Something like that.
Decided to step back from proceedings, and Joe got roped in, and we carried on. And what's happened since then? Do you think it's been a crap decision or a good decision, or what? How has it affected you?
I think it's been a great decision. I can actually get to listen to PSC now without knowing in advance what's going to be said because I wasn't on it. I actually get to enjoy it for the first time in, 18 years. No, I think you've done a great job. I think going fortnightly was a good choice as well. And with the occasional show slipped in, I think that was perfect. It lets you build up material and have something to say. So, yeah, well, full steam ahead, and you will get to show 1,000, I'm sure, one day.
One of the things that I'm really pleased about having Joe on the show is that we do dip our toe into the waters of the Far East devices, which we kind of shied away from largely when you and I were doing it. And we kind of weren't that interested in it. But I've got myself much more interested in that. And Joe's really into all that, Far East stuff. So I think that has added another angle to things. Do you think, Joe?
Yeah, well, actually, one of my American friends, Chad, he calls me China Joe, because I'm that much into the Far East phone, so, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so a change, and moving forward towards Show 1000, which someone worked out when it was going to be, but I can't remember what it was now.
It'll certainly take twice as long to get there, because it's going every fortnight.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you'll still be alive, Ted, you'll still be doing it.
Although we did sneak extra shows in now and again. We did an extra show last week, which we covered all the current news that we could think of in, and people have fed back to tell us, actually, that was a really good show. They really enjoyed it. Loads of content flying from one topic to another, and lots of newsy stuff going on. So interesting. And because of that, I thought to myself, let's do another experiment here, like we did with when Gavin Fabiani Le Monde was on, and give the floor to Steve, really. He's got loads to talk about, and we can chip in as he goes along. Just to let you know that this is show PSC 877. It's the 22nd of December, as I say, just before Christmas, and it's our special. So the next show after this is scheduled to be on the 5th of January, after New Year, so this is very much the Christmas and New Year special, we reckon. So there you go. Over to you, Steve, and let us know. Oh, hang on a minute, Joe's put a note in here. What's that about?
Oh, it's a silly note, really. It's my favourite comment from the last show. It was actually Steve Litchfield said, "I reckon you'll need a special guest for the Christmas special." Yeah. And we have indeed.
We do indeed, yeah. So the floor is yours, Steve, and do feel free to meander as you wish. And we'll, as I say, we'll chip in as we go, and it'll be a hopefully very interesting discussion.
Yeah, there's several people in our community who do also use iPhones as primaries, but I'm probably one of the more high profile. In stock at the moment, my primary SIM is in the iPhone 17 Pro Max. And yes, I know I said I wasn't going to buy it, but I'll come to that in a moment. There was a bit of a to and fro with devices. I've still got the iPhone 14 Pro Max, which I just use as a sort of general media device and filming when I'm trying to do something like a tutorial with the iPhone 17 Pro Max. So having two iPhones, both of which are good at shooting video, seems to make sense. I've got the Surface Duo Original here, which I still love. Got my second pay-as-you-go SIM, and I've got a third pay-as-you-go SIM currently in the Gemini PDA. So all kind of the last two are certainly very unique devices, if rather old. And I've got a load of old Nokias, as you guys know, from 2015 and before. And I get them out occasionally and do videos on them. I did have a couple of Sony PR units, which I sent them over to Ted. I thought he might get more use out of them. Because yes, Ted, you're also offering stuff to me, which is always kind. But unless I can actually think of a video storyline, something I want, I can say that I haven't said before, I normally pass that by.
Yes.
You had a 21:9 epiphany later in the show notes. I thought maybe you could insert it here because this is quite appropriate at this point. What was your epiphany about the Sony Xperia 1 Mark V?
I think that the bottom line was that it took me quite a long time to conclude, along with Sony, that 21:9 is just wrong. They decided with the release of the Xperia 1 Mark 6, to move away from that 21:9, and I think that was a really good decision. I did use the 1 Mark 5 that you sent back over as my main phone for a while. Then I switched to the 5 Mark 5, and it just doesn't feel right anymore. They've also moved away from the 21:9 on the 10 series as well, and I just think it's much better. Now, for someone consuming loads of widescreen media or playing games or attaching it to a Sony camera, it might just be dandy, but for the rest of us, I just think it's unwieldy, too tall for the hand, and just simply clumsy. As I say, I love the Sony Xperia phones, but I think they've got it right now, and 21:9 is just wrong, and I'm glad they moved on that way. Is that what you were thinking I meant?
Yeah. The thing that Sony's idea was that people would watch movies, actual, cinematic sort of 21:9 literal movies on their phones. And people don't tend to do that. They might watch YouTube clips here and there. They don't. It might watch a bit of Netflix. They don't really watch movies, in quotes. Which is why they've now gone back to something more traditional. I think I was listening to Marques Brownlee, and he was saying that most of their videos are 2:1, which would by definition be 18:9. So you can watch, if you put that on a Sony, you get black bars either side. And that's like on my Sony, I tend to then pinch and splay my fingers so it fills the screen, but then you're chopping off the top and bottom. So I completely agree. For most 2025, even video playback, and 21:9 is just way too wide, but I'm still keen to have it back. I've got a couple of ideas of things to do with it now. So having sent it to you, because I ran out of ideas, I'm now asking for it back.
Yeah, sure, no
problem. I've got a few things to shoot, if that's all right.
And I'm quite happy, for even though you're not on the show regularly, you're still very much part of the team, and if you want anything that's sitting here in stock, then just shout.
Yeah, I think my ideas are the 1 Mark 5 back. I'm kind of missing Sony at this point. I'm missing the dynamic vibration. I'm missing the fact that it's got a large internal storage and superb audio chips. And I'd be completely revamping my music, digital music library. So it'd be kind of nice to have that all on a Sony as well, especially with the headphone jack. So that's kind of where I'm going. And that'll happen over the next month or two. And there should be a few videos in it as well.
Cool.
Just quickly on that note, what Ted said about you being very much part of the team. If you ever want to send a voice note on something, or you want us to put an extra show in, you want to be guests, just let us know, because that would be great. Like, I know you should be more active on the MeWe, with things about Apple with their new software, and it'd be great to have like a little voice note from you as well to slip in maybe. I think the guys would love to hear it, if you're up for it.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. Unlike the tech gremlins before we recorded this podcast, I will get my audio act together.
Yeah.
going over my decision then, why did I buy the iPhone 17 Pro Max at £1,200? Now, did I need to upgrade my iPhone 14 Pro Max? Absolutely not. It did everything I needed and was like a stainless steel tank, and it will basically last forever. But here's the tale. I bought a mint condition iPhone 16 at a good price for my wonderful PSC classified. I think it was £625. My idea was that Ted could try it as a modern iPhone, and you did, and you reported back in the summer. Is it possible you could summarise in under 30 seconds your verdict on the iPhone 16, Ted?
Do you know, I can't remember now. I've got a feeling that I was not impressed with the speaker output, which kind of put me on my back foot to begin with. Didn't I think it was a bit small as well, which is why eventually I have gone and secured myself an iPhone 14 Pro Max, the same as you, although it's not a 1 terabyte one. But I think, a bit like Joe, I'm really struggling to get the enthusiasm up to even fire it up and use it and look at it even. When something dynamic comes along, something great comes along, some new feature, I absolutely will. And that's the reason I've got it, really. But the 16, thinking back, I think possibly that was it. It was that I was just underwhelmed by the speakers, and it didn't get me off on the right foot, as well as all the other things about the Apple iOS interface, which is just alien to me, and I don't like it.
Yeah. So, having let you try it, because I knew you had a fairly underwhelming older and less capable iPhone before. I just wanted to give you a taste of what's kind of in the modern age. But then, having you have returned it to me, I was then left with this iPhone 16, and I used it for shooting a few videos and exploring some of the features like the camera control. But then I was kind of left with it and wondering what to do with it. And then out of the blue, a customer phoned asking if I knew anyone who had an iPhone for sale. So I let them have the 16 for £550. So £75 lost to give Ted the iOS experience. I reckon that's fine. Plus, I did get, say, my own content done.
Hang on a minute. The original idea was that you were going to give it to your daughter. You bought it from someone. It was coming to me en route to you because you had it planned to give to your daughter.
Yeah, she said no, thank you. She wants to. she's got a 12 Pro, so she's got the extra telephoto.
Right.
And also, she was just very happy with the current setup, so she didn't want to change, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's got her eyes on your 14 Pro Max.
I think that is possible, yes. Anyway, so I had a £550 burning a hole in my pocket, and then this was a week after the iPhone 17 series release day. I figured the top models would already be sold out on back order everywhere. Nothing online. I went to the Apple store in Reading on the off chance I was there. I asked nicely. They said, we've got one silver iPhone 17 Pro Max 256 available. It arrived that morning. £1,200. But the way I was looking at it was this was only, only in quotes, £650 more from what I just got for the 16. So a 2025 flagship for almost half RRP. And I know I'm fooling myself a lot. But it got me over the, pull the trigger, buy it, hump, and then walk out feeling rather guilty. But anyway.
It was fate, Steve. It was there for you.
It was. They were back-ordered all over the place. And the silver one, I think, was the most common because most people wanted the orange and the dark blue, I think. But I'm happy. So
Have you missed the 1 terabyte, though?
No, not at all. I'm coming to that.
Sorry.
Okay. The 1 terabyte, I never used more than about 240 gigabytes. Okay. Those 750 gigabyte literally doing absolutely nothing. So in hindsight, I'm glad I bought it because I do gain. I've got some bullet points here in the show notes, which I want to go over. I get a second phone, as I say, as both my backup and video shooting device with plenty of storage, as you just mentioned, Ted, so I can wave around my 17 Pro Max and camera. I can shoot videos right, left and centre. I never have to worry about running out of storage because I've got all this spare capacity in shooting basically YouTube shorts. We'll put a link to that hopefully in the show notes and people will see the videos I'm still doing. I gained support and upgrades now until at least 2032. The 14 Pro Max run out in 2029, which I know is still 3.5 years away. But just by going a new device by 3 years, you gain 3 years more support, by which time I'll be in my 70s, which is a bit of a shudder moment, really. I can't believe it. But yes, support until 2032. I get a bigger and a better screen. I think it's 0.2-inch diagonal greater, and it is a gorgeous screen. It's the reflectivity is less outdoors. It's noticeable, and it's a gorgeous experience when you're taking photographs, for example. The 14 Pro Max is pretty good, but this is better again. You get a longer battery life by quite some margin. I start the 17 Pro Max on 90% each morning, which is a battery longevity trick. You set it in settings to only charge to 90, so you're not hammering that last 10%, which kind of degrades the battery. So I start each morning on 90%, and it's usually down to about 40% by bedtime on a heavy day. So still masses of margin of error, and I think I can get 4 or 5 years on this original battery. I think I did a YouTube short on this topic, Joe, and you piped up in the comments and said, yeah, you thought I could manage that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. It's a battery beast, really, the 17 Pro Max. I mean, the Pro Max series has always been good, hasn't it? But this one is very, very good.
Yeah, I think it's the vapor chamber cooling and so forth. It means that the processor never really gets hot. The battery is never going to get really stressed. So the battery is going to last forever. And there's because iOS is so efficient, for certainly for what I'm doing, I'm not playing heavy games. I'm not doing video editing on the phone. So it doesn't really tax the Pro Max. I lose about 50% from morning till night. And then that's half a cycle, half a charging cycle. And it rinse and repeat the next day. So yeah, I'm pretty optimistic. This will, for better or for worse, be my phone for the next 5 or 6 years, or until I next get tempted. Who knows? Far better speakers than the 14 Pro Max, and I reckon those in the 17 Pro Max are perhaps the best I've heard on any phone ever. It's processed sound, I'll admit. The bass octave shifting and the enforced Dolby Atmos means that audio purists won't be happy, and I know Steve Nutt probably won't be happy listening to this, but I just like the punch, and it sounds dramatic and powerful. I know, Joe, I've heard you sing the praises of the 17 Pro Max a bit bigger as well.
Again, yeah, the speakers are up there with the best. I think one device that I'd put up there as close is probably the Honor Magic Pro series, but yeah, the 17 Pro Max is fantastic speakers, definitely.
Yeah. Ted, the 40, you haven't, given that you had the iPhone 16 and then the 14 Pro Max of your own, how do the speakers on those two compare?
Yeah, well, as I say, I was disappointed with the 16, and when I got the 14 Pro Max fired up and running, I listened to the speakers. The reason that it's not set up at the moment is because I was in the process of selling it, and so it hasn't been, it was reset to be sold, and then the person that was supposed to be buying it pulled out, and it wasn't, there was no hard feeling or anything, but... And I never got back to setting it up again. But I did have a spell with it set up, and that's when I judged that the speakers were, yes, very good. But I also think that Joe's right. The Honor speakers on some of the devices, and also, I mean, other phones I've been really surprised by. I had a Fairphone 5 in recently, for example, and the speakers are fantastic on that. And also the... Nothing Phone 3, which Joe has been reviewing as
Yeah, they're pretty good, yeah.
The speakers on that are really good. I think it's actually becoming quite... I mean, you might be talking about degrees here, Steve, and fair enough, that's fine. And that bass octave shifting making a difference, fine. But I do think that lots of phones now are catching right up, and they're thinking about the... What's the one that's got the woofer on the back, Joe?
Oh, the... The Bose speaker one, that's the Poco, F8 Ultra, is it? The F8 Ultra?
Yeah. So I think they are starting to think about it now.
Yeah. I think we've said several times in the past that all these companies are getting the memo now, and the stereo speakers they're producing are quite usable for almost anyone, apart from the iPhone Air, of course, which is the way it's now gone back to a mono single speaker, which is I just couldn't live with. But
the best thing is they've stopped using the earpiece as a speaker. That's when it was always terrible.
Yeah. The earpiece is now a proper speaker, just turned down a bit for telephone calls.
Yeah.
So back to the iPhone 17 Pro Max, things I like. A genuinely usable 8x telephoto camera in daylight. This is something I've said for a while. We had the previous generations were 5x, weren't they? And you could digitally zoom in beyond that, but you couldn't really go beyond 5x without degradation. Because this has got a high megapixel, 4x optical, the 8x telephoto, the smart crop in is really, really good. Now, I know several other Android phones do a similar trick, and some of the Honor, I heard you talking in the previous PSC about this, Joe, so they do kind of a similar trick, but it's just really usable, and this is without any AI, just original detail. Now the Pixels and some Samsung, they kind of add in AI to enhance the zooms, but I kind of like the way Apple does it. It's just smart cropped into the sensor and a bit of intelligent imaging workflow, and really quite detailed. I've done lots in daylight, at least, and all of these phones, once you go to low light, then the telephoto camera's smart cropped in. The sensor size is so minuscule that it really struggles.
Is that a big change from the 14 Pro Max, Steve?
Well, the 14 Pro Max is just a simple 3x optical, so right. and 12 megapixels, so dramatically different. And so that's partly what prompted me to really want to Certainly test the 17 Pro Max. I can't claim to have done very many 8x shots in real world because, you know, that's an awfully big zoom to be shooting family, friends, pets, landscapes. But it, in terms of testing it and just playing around, having good geeky fun, it's been absolutely great. Will Apple add in AI Zoom Plus or whatever in a future model? Maybe they will. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. But I just think it's a nice natural thing. They don't over sharpen too much, certainly on the telephoto. And I've posted some results up on the MeWe group, and I've been overall very impressed by it.
Yeah, I think it's really helped. They've actually given it a much bigger sensor than previous models. I think the 16 Pro Max was 1.3, wasn't it, or something like that, and it's now 1/1.2 or something. So I can't remember now. I have to look it up to get the exact, but it's 56% bigger than the 16 Pro Max.
Yeah, and you've got the Tetra Prism optics folding, which I still think is unique to Apple. I'm sure other companies will go down that route because it means you can have a longer optical path without actually adding thickness. And so it's all quite clever. I think they've done a good job. And so I'm glad I waited the 3 years rather than, say, 2 years to do the upgrade. So I'm very happy. Although I was fine with Lightning connectors because the rest of the family was on them, bit by bit, things are changing over to USB Type-C. So the newer iPads, for example, we've got a new iPad in the family now for my daughter, and that's Type-C. New accessories across the board. You can now get stuff from AliExpress, Ted, you know, car vacuums and that sort of thing. And they're all USB Type-C. Headphones, all USB Type-C. So Type-C is basically now everywhere in my office, and a micro USB thing is rare. And Lightning's becoming rarer as more and more things in our house switch over. So, yeah, I'm happy. And now, yes, I can plug my iPhone into any of my laptops, any of my accessories, and Type-C is everywhere, which is good. More RAM, 12 gigabytes versus 8 gigabytes, which is always good. I mean, the 14 Pro Max is hardly a slouch, but several of the AI things that Apple are developing slowly, but they are developing, things like the photo cleanup do work faster on the 17 Pro Max. And in theory, ChatGPT works, but there's a bit of a trick here that Joe can probably relate to this. If you want to ask Siri, sorry, I'll use the S word. Ask the S word, anything in particular that's any way advanced beyond setting an alarm or reminder, half the time it makes a right hash of it or just says it found a result in the web still, or it's a disaster. But you can say, hey, S word, ask ChatGPT to, and then give the whole involved query, like what were the verdict on the Prime Ministers of England between 1960 and 1980, and it will go off and deliver it with voice. So I'm driving along, and in theory, driving along, you can't say, hey, S-word, and ask it a complicated query. It just won't do it, partly because you're driving, which is fair enough. But you can say, hey, S-word, ask ChatGPT, and then give the full query, whatever it is, and ChatGPT will deliver it audio form over the car speakers with all the very things that Siri wouldn't do. So half the time I'm just saying, hey, S-word, ask ChatGPT. And I think from what Apple has been trying to do, if you long press the camera control, for example, it tries to use ChatGPT for anything it can't handle. And I think the way forward is that it just uses ChatGPT more and more. Or, I did see, didn't they do a link up with Google and Gemini? So maybe they'll switch over at some point to Gemini.
I heard that the new S word is going to be with Gemini in the future. But just quickly on ChatGPT, I saw it, there's a setting on the iPhone about with ChatGPT integration. You can turn it off and on. I don't know why you'd turn it off, to be honest, because it's a good thing. But I did see that setting there.
Yeah, I know I've poo-pooed AI a few times, and there have been some stupid uses of it in terms of, you know, Genmoji and whatever, but simply just asking questions. So for example, I'm driving along and someone in the car mentions a particular medication. I think, well, I haven't heard of that. So I can say, hey, S-word, ask ChatGPT about, you know, sorbitol or some medical term, and it will give me the answer. And this would have taken 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes of Googling, normally skipping past all the sponsored ads and the whatever, and just to get to one match which may or may not answer the question. I just find the ChatGPT and Gemini just so good now answering questions that would normally have taken me minutes to research. I now get the answer perfectly researched in seconds.
Is that Apple's approach to this? Are they telling their customers to use this method?
It's ChatGPT is their fallback. So if the S word can't handle it, it can fall back to ChatGPT depending on which mode you're in. If you're in imaging mode and trying to find out about something that you're in front of, then it falls back to ChatGPT by default. Normally, I'm in the car doing this, and I do it all by voice and not asking it to ask ChatGPT. And I've also got on my iPhone lock screen, you know, they get two shortcuts at the bottom, one for torch and by default, one for camera. I change the camera one to launch ChatGPT. So at any point, I can just press and hold that button on the iPhone lock screen, and I'm straight through to voice access to ChatGPT, which is really quite key. So basically, I've got ChatGPT built in, voice assistant ready to go with just one touch, which I find very useful.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ted.
I was meaning by my question, are Apple saying to their customers, this is what you're supposed to say, hey S-word, ask ChatGPT?
it's a Steve Litchfield hack. I thought,
right, okay,
this will work,
okay,
and it does.
Okay,
it's a very clever hack. It's brilliant. It does make Apple intelligence a bit cheeky because it's actually ChatGPT that's doing the work. But I do like that top tip.
Yeah,
it's good.
I think Apple intelligence is kind of their umbrella term for all the other things like the cleanups and all the AI stuff that all the companies are doing. Apple intelligence is a bit of a con, really, given that half the time, if not 80% of the time, I'm actually using ChatGPT or Gemini behind the scenes. But
Moto do the same, don't they, Ted?
Yeah, they use Perplexity, don't they? And you can it piggybacks that service instead. But the Motorola system is crap. It really is. The AI on Moto phones, I think, is just appalling. I use Gemini all the time for everything, and usually by voice. I never thought I'd see the day, but I do. I used to hate talking to computers, but I do. And it's just so good. And you can just find out whatever you want. And okay, you can catch it out sometimes, but most of the time, 95% of the time, what you get is right.
I enjoy catching it out, though. I'll say, you've got that wrong. And then they go, oh, yes, sorry, I did. And it's a quite funny conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sad, aren't I? Yeah.
Talking of which, I asked ChatGPT the other day about, I said, tell me what you know about PodHub UK. And it came back with some rubbish answer, nothing to do with our PodHub UK. I said, I'm sorry, it's ChatGPT, but let me correct you there. PodHub UK is a web-based network of UK podcasts, and here's the URL. And it said, thank you very much for correcting it. I'll remember that. So a day later, I went back and asked the same question. Tell me about PodHub UK. And it got it right with the right URL. So these large language models and AI, they do actually learn, and you can correct them, which is fascinating to know.
Which is okay, as long as you don't correct it badly and have fun with it, giving it false information, which must be a problem.
Yeah, the PodHub UK is an alias for Pornhub or whatever, and then
exactly,
need to learn that.
Yeah. It's porn for some people, maybe.
So, yes, silver was the colour I wanted anyway, because all the much-publicised chipping risk on the orange and dark blue units. It's a very sharp edge of the anodised aluminium, and if you do use a phone without a case and you drop it, then the orange and the dark blue is going to chip away. But it's all a bit of a moot point because I'm always going to keep my phone in the case anyway. But if worst came to the worst and my phone got run over by a truck, even with a case on it, might perhaps chip a bit. But if it's silver chipping, it will reveal the silver aluminium underneath. And that was my thought process. So in theory, when I do sell this phone, it's going to be pristine in a few years' time.
Yeah, I think that's a very good choice. I think the silver, in my opinion, is the nicest of the three colours, despite me getting the orange in. That was just purely for the show. I think the silver's definitely the nicest one. I got my wife the 17 Pro in silver, actually. And I'm glad you got it, because I think there is enough there to warrant it. And as you've mentioned, I think you'll get good value from it as well, because, again, you've mentioned you'll probably have it at least 3 years. Yeah. I don't think you'll have it 4 or 5, though. you mentioned about the vapor chamber, which I think is very good. Do you find it heats up less as a more longer-term user? Is it making a difference for you?
I can't. in all honesty, say that I found my 14 Pro Max ever got warm, even shooting video. I deliberately shoot my videos in 1080p still, because I'm basically shooting shorts, and shorts just don't work in 4K. There's no point, because they get downsampled at YouTube's end. And even my landscape videos, 1080p is quite enough. People don't want to see me in 4K. So the 14 Pro Max never really warmed up, and this certainly is. Not once have I caught it even vaguely warm, unless it's been on charge for a couple of hours from low. That very rarely happens. So I'm sure the vapor chamber is helping, even if it only helps it stay cooler when charging on a wireless charger or similar, then that's got to be good for the longevity of the battery, I think.
Absolutely, yeah, it's got to be. I think it's about time Apple did it, and no doubt they've done it well. I can imagine it'll be good for recording long-form videos in 4K if you did fancy it. Come on, Steve, we miss your longer for videos. I do enjoy your shorts, though, and carry on doing them.
Thank you. In summary, I would say that the iPhone 17 Pro Max isn't dramatically better than most of the other flagship. It's not dramatically better than the 14 Pro Max, but it is right up there, and it resets everything to reset security and support for another 3 years at the end of support, and to know that I've got the latest telephoto and the latest processor and the latest vapor chamber and all of that. It was just a natural step up, with the fact that I already had half the money sitting in my bank account. So overall, I'm happy, and I think it's a cracking phone. I'm glad you've got one as well, Joe. How long will you have yours for?
I don't know, because I can switch it up now, and I'm thinking of doing it. But then I haven't played with it enough, so a big part of me thinks maybe I should keep it longer. I'm undecided at the moment, because I haven't really given it a chance as well. Because I did plan to make some content with it, and it's a great device to compare. For example, I've got the 8 Pro from Honor at the moment, and for me to say it's one of the best out there, I need to test it against Apple's best, don't I, really? So maybe I should keep it longer.
The whole concept of only buying one phone every 3 years does sound about right to me in the modern age, whether you're a normob or whether you're most of our geeks only change every 3 months, but that's artificial. They were just swapping devices on PSC classifiers. But for your average person, even your average tech fan, one phone every 3 years and getting the most out of it, that sounds right in terms of their experience and right for the planet.
Joe,
3 years, Ted?
Joe, before we move away from what you just said, do you want to explain what that switching up thing is about? That's an O2 scheme, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's actually changed, sadly. So it used to be every 3 months you could do it, but it's now changed to every 11 months.
What could you do?
Switch the phone up. So essentially, you hand the phone back to O2, and they will clear the credit agreement down, and you can start a new contract with whatever device you wanted to get.
Right.
So that's how I was, in the past, able to change phone quite frequently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's because of many devices have gift with purchase, which is like a pair of headphones, or like Google had Gemini for a year free. They have all sorts of things like that. And that was getting abused by O2 customers, as you can imagine.
Mm.
So that's one of the reasons I think it's changed. And also with them, like with them devices that they'd switch up, they'd try and sell them like new. And I just don't think there's enough people wanting refurbished like new devices, sadly, at least not from O2.
So moving to 11 months means you can still do the same, but just longer period of time.
Yeah, which for Apple iPhone users and your Samsung S25 Ultra, your Ultra users or Fold users, it's a great proposition still. Every year you get the new flagship.
Yeah.
Providing you've looked after it, of course. It's still a good proposition.
Okay.
It's just a shame for me, who like to test a new phone every 3 months.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I did want to mention, just in terms of, you know, using a phone for longer and not buying shiny, latest. And I reckon any phone, I mean, I heard you on a recent podcast, Joe, talking about Honor Lite phones, the budget phones, and saying you could absolutely use this as your main phone and it wouldn't be a problem.
Definitely.
And I think Teb would mention to you, you've got a Fairphone 5 in. And that's fairly lowly compared to the Ultras of this world and the Pro Maxes of this world. And yet, I've said several times in videos that somebody's actual smartphone is not just the device, it's their setup, it's the logistics of everything they've got installed, they're signed into the things they need to access, it's their settings, their preferences, and it becomes a whole computing environment. And that can apply whether you're got a Fairphone 5 or an Honor something light or a 17 Pro Max. Either way, it's your phone because it's got your stuff on. And the differences are really only at the margins, whether the speakers are a bit bassier or whether the camera is a bit better. So nobody actually needs a flagship in 2025, I would say.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I have actually, for the last 5 days, since the update came through on the Fairphone 5, I have actually had my SIM card in it, and I'm all signed into everything. I've got a spare battery for it, and I have put my 1 terabyte card into it. The problem, when Android 15 arrived, they broke it because it wouldn't hold on to wallpaper, and that was really annoying. I think I spoke about it on a previous show. You set a wallpaper, and it just randomly goes back to the default one, the blue default wallpaper. No set length of time, no set event. There was no logic to it. And anyway, they ran out an update about 5 days ago, and beautiful, it was fixed, and it got a new shining light for me. And you're quite right, Steve, because I concluded in the last 5 days, as well as doing the things you just said, making it your hub and your home and your phone with everything on it, but also avoid loads of AI crap.
Yeah, absolutely. I would even contend that even iOS and Android boundaries are going away. Well, I may comment on that in a moment. But with Apple adopting RCS messaging and Google implementing AirDrop, we're seeing all sorts of cross-platform things happening now. So I will come to why people don't necessarily switch in the meantime. But in practice, the likes of you and I and Joe and people in our community, they can message people in their family on other platforms, and it's not so much of a problem as it used to be, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the only thing for iOS for me is, as I've mentioned many times, the navigation situation for me is the stumbling block. And if they add the way Android navigates, I could definitely rock an iPhone. There's loads there that I do like. But going back to what you said about not needing flagships, again, I do agree. I think people should start thinking about what's important to them and go into that element of the phone rather than the all-round specs. Because people just want, like the cameras, for example, everyone wants the Pro Max and the Ultra. Half of these people don't use the actual cameras. It's madness. The people overbuy massively on phones. It's a shame. Yeah.
I was listening to your Nomad Tech Project podcast, I think, yesterday, and Sam's completely right in saying that what he wants to see more of is not shiny video reviews of yet more technology. He wants to see more tips and tutorial videos showing people how to make more out of the device they've currently got. And I completely agree. And a lot of the video shorts I've tried to do over the last year, at least half of them have been tutorial-ish, trying to pass on some word of advice, hopefully, that someone else can latch on to. So, yeah, good call, Sam. And I think people need to make more of the hardware they already own without consigning yet another phone to another life or to landfill, and just save them buying yet another shiny thing.
We're talking Fairphone.
We are. I even toyed with making the Gemini PDA, which is stuck on Android 8. Yes, repeat 8. And my primary in 2026, just for a month, just to show it could be done. I may do this. I think I might miss NFC for Google Pay, but hey, wouldn't it, to make an Android 8 QWERTY keyboarded phone, a primary smartphone in 2026, that's a challenge I may yet set myself.
That's a video I want to see, so a long-form one, Steve.
Loads of chat online about a folding iPhone in 2026. I'm still sceptical it will happen next year, especially since the Air has been selling so poorly. Now, if you think about an iPhone, folding iPhone 18 Ultra, let's call it that, it's going to be £2,500 minimum, and that's for the lower spec. And that's crazy money. You think of a 1 terabyte iPhone 18 Ultra, and that's going to be £3,000. I mean, that's the level at which someone's wife says, so it's the family holiday or a new toy for you. And that's the point where if you want to stay married, you say it's the family holiday. So I can't see that Apple necessarily. I know it's been rumored a lot. I will be I think it's 50-50 whether they'll actually do it in 2026, Joe.
Yeah, I don't know why they'd do a fold over a flip as well, because I think if they did a flip, it would sell buckets full. I know loads of people that have, that Apple and Sam's daughter, actually is one of them, has moved to a Samsung flip from Apple, and she was an Apple user. So I think there is a market out there with app. I think a lot of Apple users, if they do change, it'll be for something different, like a flip.
I think you're right. The concept of showing someone something that looks like their current iPhone and then folding it in half and saying, see it now, it takes up half the space in your pocket. That's a real selling point for 98% of the iPhone user base. Whereas getting the Samsung Z Fold-like form factor, the clamshell folding form factor, and that's appealing to just a small niche of the current user base, and it's going to be premium prices up near the Vision Pro prices. That's just not the way to go. I completely agree with Sam and you that a flipping iPhone, and that's not a euphemism, that literally is a flipping iPhone, I think that would sell far, far better, and it's a natural way to go.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think, Ted?
Yeah, and no doubt Apple will claim to have invented it, even though Motorola have made this. I mean, they've taken over really Samsung's lead in some ways. I think they've really hit the market. They've gone to America with it as well, and I think Motorola are doing really well with the flip device. Loads of them out there, loads of kudos, and lots of. Lots of people absolutely loving them. In some ways, doing better than the Samsung ones. I'd be surprised if Apple didn't get on board with that.
Yeah, I think they must be looking at that and thinking that's market share we could have. So, yeah, I think that makes more sense as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they wouldn't have to even tweak their software much, because iOS already works on an iPhone-sized device. This would just be literally folding in half for easier storage in your pocket. So it'd be much easier than having to upscale the iPhone interface into iPad-like with a sort of mini tablet design.
I suppose they'd have to decide what's put on the outside, though, Steve.
My guess is that if Apple did do a flip, they would just do like the early Samsung Folds with a kind of just a time and notification service.
Oh, right.
You would have to open it most of the time. I don't think they put a full, fully functional external screen.
Although I have this vision of an AirPod Classic, the flipping iPhone being like an AirPod Classic when it's shut. iPod Classic.
An AirPod. Talking of folding phones, I know I keep on agreeing with you too, so, but I nod along at home. I'm completely with you and with Sam on the ideal folding form factor being passport size. So I like the Surface Duo, like the Pixel Fold Original, which you've still got, Ted, even like the Huawei Pura X. Now at last, we've seen some leaks from Motorola and others. So other manufacturers are now showing interest in this idea. This is the obvious way to go, an actual landscape design when you unfold it for watching media rather than just a big square with still black bars top and bottom. It just makes so much sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Shane has Shane Craig has been on the video on YouTube this week, doing two or three videos about this. He's really fired up about it because he, I think, loved the Pixel Fold more than anyone else at the time, even though his was knackered. he was completely sold on the idea, and we are too. You're right. It just seems to make sense. It's a really good formula for a size of device. Very clever. And into the mix, talking about speakers earlier, I think that the Pixel Fold has got the best speakers of any phone I've got here, including the iPhone 14 Pro Max.
The Pixel Fold speakers were very good. My only downside on them, they were kind of top and bottom rather than left and right. You have to kind of rotate the opened fold to get left and right, which that kind of annoyed me, but I do agree they really were quite loud and good quality.
Just quickly, Steve, what's your thoughts on the tri-fold?
I've seen a lot of videos on that. Several people have done hands-on. It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, the concept of a phone which becomes a tablet is great. It's incredible tech demo. It's so thin and so flimsy when it's opened up there. Half the fun or half the utility in a tablet like an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy Tab or whatever, is the fact that it's pretty robust. You can throw it around the house. You can give it to the kids to watch media on. You can use it. Something that you're going to have to baby, and it's 3.8 millimeters thick. I mean, it's almost a no-no and spend £2,700 again. Again, it's a ridiculous amount of money on something which is so relatively fragile when you can get a really top tablet and a really top flagship smartphone for way less money, and they'll both be going many years after the trifold is packed up.
And the name's ridiculous as well.
It is. Yeah, they should have called it the bifold, but then that would have confused people even more. Anyway, I did want to just react to something. This is not something against Nomad Tech Project. There are plenty of other podcasts out there that love to talk about switching. So it's fun to chat about the huge number of Android device options, but I do get annoyed when some commentators online, some podcasters, they talk about someone switching over from an iPhone because of the specs. They kind of miss the point. Almost no one uses an iPhone because of the specs, not even me. iOS or the iPhone is something that on the whole is reliable and talks to other family members and a wide accessory ecosystem and the Find My and AirDrop and so forth. That's the attraction, not the RAM or the camera megapixels or raw speed, which is partly why Apple, I think, doesn't really even mention things like RAM and battery size and camera megapixels necessarily. They do talk about the benefits, and they're right, really. So while I love to hear Ted or Miriam or Juan Carlos Bagnell, whoever, chatting about the latest Honor or Xiaomi phone, there's no actual temptation for me personally to switch, at least not as a primary device, because I want to stay within something that's familiar and use the software I want to talk to the people I want to talk with and be as integrated as possible. But the same does apply the other way around, as both of you will attest. After a decade or more of Android, all you'll really consider now is another Android phone. It would take an earthquake, a mountain slide for you or Joe or Ted to switch to an iPhone at this point in the game. Is that fair?
Well, Joe's going to do better at that with me, with a new one in his hand, which he's kind of tied into. But yeah, you're absolutely right. But the thing that I love about the Android world is that you can, someone in my position certainly, can swap and change. And now I know that not everyone is in a position to be able to have multiple phones available to, at a whim, switch your SIM card. But I love the fact that one day I can wake up and I think, I really fancy using my Moto today, and just get on and do it. A very, very quick copy and restore of SMS or RCS, and I'm back in just where I left off. And that's what I love about Android. So much choice. So many different ways in which you can get in there. Joe?
Yeah, I agree with Steve about, like, what you get used to. But like, what I do like about Android is the flexibility, the different options you've got available. Like I mentioned earlier, people should think about what they want to do with their device as their main purpose and go for a device like that. So if you want a really good speaker, maybe that F8 Ultra by Poco is the one to go for. If you want to have a bigger canvas with pen support, the V5 from Honor. If you want to have the best cameras, maybe the Oppo Find X9 Pro with the teleconverter and all that business is the one to go for. It's there's more niche products with Android, which is great. But I do agree with Steve, though. Like, it's what you get used to, which keeps you there, and it's not necessarily the hardware, especially with iPhone users, that they wouldn't consider any Android device. It's very hard to get people to switch. Very hard.
Yeah,
and same for Samsung.
Yeah. Tongue in cheek, Ted, I could take my SIM card right now out of my iPhone 17 Pro Max and stick it in the 14 Pro Max, and it would look exactly identical.
Totally. If you're staying within your system, that's fine.
Yeah.
And also, it needs to be said that some of the things that the Far East firms are doing that are nicking Apple's ideas are just great, and I'm fine with that. If they take the good ideas from Apple and run with them, like they have with Honor, I love using my Honor Pro Max because it's nicked some of those really good ideas that I like, but it still lets me use them and stay in my Android ecosystem, and it all works, and it's all, I feel comfortable. Yeah, mix and match, I suppose, but I don't know. I think Android just lets me, it keeps me comfortably in Google. You know, the bottom line is it's about Google services. And I know what you're going to say, Steve. You'll say, well, I can run all the Google services on my iPhone. but yes and no, there's an argument to be had either way there. And okay.
I think it goes to Steve's point earlier about it's much easier to switch if you did want to, though, now, because they are getting more and more similar every year, aren't they? Which is a good thing, I think.
And I am effectively running my iPhone as a Google phone. I use all my contacts from Google, all my emails from Google. I use all Google's apps and services. But with the Apple stuff behind the scenes as needed, I guess. I do remember back in 2017, what's that, 8 years ago now, some of the Microsoft guys, when they were asked why they weren't putting more effort into Windows 10 Mobile, which they simply showed off their iPhones running all of Microsoft's apps and services seamlessly and said that this is the way to go. So the same sort of idea, using one company's stuff on a different company's hardware, mixing and matching. And it's just good that we've got to this world now where services and applications and companies, if you know what you're doing, they can be used interchangeably and you get the best of all worlds.
I think that was Google's original plan, probably, before the Pixel phone was out. I think they was more about what their software was like on other hardware, wasn't they?
There was a Google Gmail app for Symbian back in the day when Gmail first launched, I think. If a form factor comes out for Android, Ted, that's totally new, something we've never seen before, then I'm certainly up for covering it and taking interest in it and trying it out. But I think at this point it would have to be literally transformative, not just physically transformative, in order to shake me out of the current status quo. And I'm just having fun. I've got a Mac on my desk. I've got a PC next to it. I've got an iPhone with my main SIM and an Android phone with my secondary SIM. And they all basically talk to each other and use the same services and the same applications. So I'm kind of in it settled at the moment, but it's a good way of being settled and not giving absolute favour to any one company or any one set of APIs and services.
Except you might get bored.
No, there's life, Ted. You take your phone, you get out there, you open your front door, you go out and use these phones in the real world, you take photos, you meet people, you go on trips. You never get bored.
But it's great to see that you can share files and photos and stuff between ecosystems now, which is what I want to see more of. Because at the moment, as an Apple user, you do kind of feel like you have to have AirPods, you have to have an iPad. Whereas it'd be nice if in the future you can, if you want the latest Samsung tablet, you could go for it.
Samsung's an interesting example because they're trying really hard with their ecosystem to get people locked in. And Honor are going the same way as well. We'll talk later about a watch in the Honor world. But I think all of these firms are trying to do that. But the one thing that Android just seems to have is that however baked in you get into Honor or Motorola or whatever it is, yes, if you go away, you might lose some features of it, but the bones of it will just be the same. And again, Steve will argue, well, that you can argue the same for iPhone. And fair enough. I'm not going to be part of a platform war. I'm just saying that my place of point of reference is the Android world. And I think that if you want to get baked into a system, I mean, the obvious one is Samsung. You can really, really get baked into that. And you'll never come out again if you want to always, forever, have all the stuff that that Galaxy devices provide you with. Interesting discussion.
One thing to mention is with Honor, though, they've got something called the Alpha Plan, which I won't talk about too much now, but look it up. It's about them working with other OEMs and with AI and collaboration with devices talking to each other. And that's what the future is, really.
The Samsung have a decent ecosystem. Apple have a decent ecosystem. Google have a reasonable ecosystem. But I would agree with you, Ted. Although Samsung, you might say, is the logical one, I would actually argue it just sticking with Google services. Google are across everything, desktop browsers and phones, tablets, every manufacturer of phone. Everybody talks to Google. So if you're going to place any bet, you'll do what you and I both did 12, 15 years ago and just sign up for Gmail and Google services and just they let them know everything about your life and just stick with Google forever.
Yes, indeed. Married to the cause.
To Gemma.
A few links before I move on to your next section, if that's all right. There's a link that every year, this particular guy, I think it's called This Apple Guy is his nickname, he creates painstaking iPhone internals wallpapers. Essentially, it's a look as if your iPhone screen was transparent in the sense that you could see through to the internals, and you set your wallpaper to show what the internals would look like if you're looking through the screen. And it's not just as naff as it sounds, he puts hundreds of hours work in to each one, hundreds of hours. He's a graphic artist and they're absolutely fabulous. So if I'll put the link in the show notes, if that's all right. And they're now out for the 17 Pro series. So just a heads up, they're free if you want. They're free if you want them, or you can pay $4.99 as a donation if you want to help support him. But I think that's worth a link. And every year I grab them and I try them for a while until I get bored and I change it. But it's nice to have them. Well done to him for creating them.
It's funny you say that because I've got a Spigen case on my 17 Pro Max, which shows like the internals a bit. So I'm very much into that type of thing. I'll have a look at that.
I had the same Spigen case for my my older iPhone, and it wasn't quite the actual internals, but it gave me a nice little clue as to the sort of thing you might want to see if you were an Uber geek like us.
I've got a clear back on the back of my Fairphone 5. I'll have you know. And you can see straight into the back of it. Mind you, all you can see is the battery mostly.
I've asked Fairphone to loan me a Fairphone 6. I'd like to return to them and do some more videos on Fairphone because they do so much right. Mm-hmm. And now you've enthused me about the speakers. Hey, I'll give it a try.
I can't speak for the 6, but.
Just in other news, just PodHub UK, we mentioned earlier, has had a bit of a revamp. I added Nomad Tech Project, Joe, which I think sits quite well there in the video section. I also wrote a little paragraph of blurb about each entry in PodHub UK for people who came to it, didn't know what the heck each thumbnail was going to link over to. So have a look at stevelitchfield.com, PodHub UK in there. And hopefully they help someone. Hopefully no disruption to my YouTube shorts. They'll carry on through 2026, one or two a week. And maybe into MeWe Watch. Are people who've got the MeWe app, you'll notice there's a new tab called Watch. Am I right thinking, Ted, that this is probably going to be a sort of TikTok-like video section when it launches?
Yeah, it looks like it. They're going after Threads and TikTok and YouTube Shorts, aren't they? And I've no doubt at all. But the only thing is you need to be careful with, as I think I said to you privately, Steve, is that if you start uploading videos to your MeWe account, there's a limit on how much you can upload for non-premium members, so that they're obviously going to use this as a way to get people to sign up for premium membership, which is not a lot. I mean, I pay £4 a month, I think, and I get 108 gigabytes of space on their servers. But that's how MeWe stay in business. And I think, yes, very much they're going to try their hand at doing an upward scrolling doom scroller.
So hopefully you'll see my YouTube shorts. Let's just call them MeWe shorts or MeWe watches. I don't know, whatever they call them. I'll upload some of my videos when I from my YouTube shorts portfolio up to MeWe and see how they do there. It might be one less click for people to see my video rather than have to click all the way through.
I would definitely go there and watch them. But as I say, watch out for your storage.
Okay. Did you want to introduce the app wrap or shall I just launch into it?
Go straight to it.
This is the app mention section of the podcast. I'd like to mention something I have mentioned a long time ago on this podcast, back when I was in charge, about something called KeyPassium. And on Android, I use KeyPass to Android. They both do the same job. And my concept is people know what password managers are. Very few people use them, unfortunately. I see go to people's houses and they don't know what the passwords are, or they're written on a scrap of paper somewhere. So I keep trying to educate people. But most people in our community, they know what a password manager is. But then getting that same password manager to synchronize data for free Notes free of subscriptions across all their devices. That's trickier. So my solution, and it's worth I think mentioning here, and we'll link to the two main smartphone apps, is to use Google Drive. Again, back to Google services. You have a open source password manager, KeePass or KeePass 2 in this case. You put that database on Google Drive, and then Google Drive is viewable on iPhone. It's viewable, of course, on Android. It's viewable on Windows. It's viewable on Mac. And you can, and the various utilities will keep it synchronized so that in every case, whatever device I'm on, any kind of laptop or desktop or any of my phones, they've all got Google Drive installed and signed in. They've all got either KeePass to Android or KeePassium on the iPhone, and they all use exactly the same data. So I can go be at a customer's house, open up my iPhone and add a password or add a personal note. I get back to the car, I open up my MacBook, for example, and it's there in my encrypted database, my KeePass database, synced through Google Drive. I'm back home again, I open up my Surface Duo. I want to check something or copy and paste a reference number or something, a password. It's there because it's all been synced through Google Drive. So do think about this kind of solution. KeePass is open source and it's completely secure and it doesn't need subscriptions. And I think that this is the way I keep all my passwords, all my personal information synchronized through everything for free. So I just wanted to give it a bit of a shout out.
Okay.
Yeah, I should consider something like this because we mentioned about being baked into Google. Google is my password manager and even makes a lot of my passwords for me.
Me too. Yeah. And you've got to just trust that they are as good as they are saying with their security about encryption. And I completely trust that the all of that data with Google. And yeah, I may be wrong, Steve, and I may come unstuck one day and you'll say, I told you about KeePass and you should have used it.
Yeah. Imagine if Chrome, for example, all of a sudden one day, it's refused to prompt you with any passwords and it had just forgotten everything. You'd think, oh my goodness, my life is screwed, wouldn't you?
Yeah, except that you go to those services and it's your AA insurance and you just tell them that you've forgotten your password and they send you a new one. So, yeah,
I've got everything to hand on every platform for free. I just thought it's worth
it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, it is. It is. It was. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Steve, the amount of people I've seen with the exact same piece of paper you're talking about, ridiculous.
The unique thing is that I can do it. I know your thing with using Google and Chrome and so forth worked really well on cross Android devices and Windows, which is what you've got, Ted, but I'm throwing in iPhones and macOS into the mix as well, and my solution synchronizes across all of those as well, thanks to the magic of Google Drive. So I know, I admit mine is an extreme example, but at least I can demonstrate. I'm out with friends and customers and I open up KeePassium or KeePass to Android and I say, I've got 12,500 passwords. Their jaw drops. How can you possibly? Of course, I don't remember any of them. I remember one master password, or just use my fingerprint or Face ID, and I'm into all 12,500. And hopefully, this blows people's minds enough to investigate this type of solution. Anyway,
Yeah, I think it's brilliant, especially cross-platform. That's what I love to see.
Also cross-platform, very quickly, again for a link in the show notes, just a quick mention of DJI Fly. I did some videos last year on the DJI Neo, I think it's called, their smallest, cheapest drone, but I've had great fun with it. But it's available for iOS and Android, and their Fly app lets you control the drone directly, so you don't need a £250 drone controller with aerial sticking up and you look like a bit of a nerd, and they're very powerful and they're longer range, but you can actually fly some of these smaller drones literally using your phone as the controller with this DJI Fly app. So, and you can, you know, while you send the drone up 100 meters away, you take photographs, shoot video, all streaming in via the phone's native Wi-Fi, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. It just works so well. So yeah, DJI Fly, and again we'll put the link in the show notes, but I've been really impressed and it just works so well.
Cool. Yeah. And those videos were good fun. I did enjoy watching those and looking at what you were doing. Definitely. Okay. Right. Okay. Thanks very much, Steve. Loads of interesting topics there. Before we get to the winner of the photo of the month for November, Joe, what have you got, anything to add into the pot?
Yeah, I'll talk about a few things. I touched on my Pro Max situation, so I can actually switch it up now, which I'm tempted to do because I haven't used it much. I'm thinking of getting a low-end phone and then paying it off and going to SIM-only, because that's, in my opinion, the way to go. I shouldn't say that, being someone who works at a network, but yeah, anyway. but there is obviously the argument to keep it and do comparisons. I'd be interested to see what other people's thoughts are, what I should do with that. The main reason I haven't used the Pro Max so much is because I love the V5 so much, and I just couldn't take my SIM out of it. And the only reason I finally did is because I got this 8 Pro for testing. So yeah, I'm a big fan. I've had other phones to test as well. So the Nothing Phone 3, which I briefly discussed on last week, I've got a video out on that. That was a really fun device. I had the Honor Magic 8 Lite with its industry first durability rating. I did a video on that as well. That was great fun to use. So I've had so many other devices to play with, which I'm more interested in. That's another reason, but maybe I should keep the Pro Max, so we'll see what people think. With the Magic 8 Pro, one embargo has lifted. I can talk about a few bits now and my first impressions. So the battery capacity, people already know this information anyway, because it's all available online. But anyway, I can confirm the battery capacity is 6,270 mAh in the EU, or the UK. I don't know if it's EU got a bigger one or not. I think it's the EU, actually, as a whole. But there is a global one, which is slightly more, and then the Chinese get a slightly bigger one. So, yeah, it's weird that there's three different variants. It's still very good. I found the battery to last quite well, easily a day, maybe a day and a half even. Like, my battery percentage right now is 68%. I was at work all day, but it is 9 p.m. now, and that's pretty decent. The chipset, everyone knows, it's going to be the 8 Elite Gen 5 chipset, which is fantastic. The camera hardware is not too dissimilar to the 7 Pro. The 50 megapixel main, 1/1.3-inch sensor, the ultra wide, which is probably the worst lens on the camera, on the phone rather, is a 1/2.88-inch sensor. But the star of the show is the periscope telephoto, which is a 200 megapixel, 1/1.4-inch sensor. It's a very large sensor, high megapixel, which can help with that AI jazz for further zoom. But it does 3.7-inch optical zoom, 3.7x optical zoom versus 3x, which was on the 7 Pro. I think 3 to 4x is the perfect place to start. Less of a gap, as Steve has mentioned in a short, actually a very good short, from the main lens. My first impressions are really good. Honestly, it's a really nice refinement on the 7 Pro. Big part of it's actually the form factor of it. It's slightly shorter, and it's not as wide, which makes it feel much nicer in the hand. So it does have a slightly smaller screen, but it's not massive difference. It weighs a little less as well, but the camera housing is slightly bigger. But I don't know if anyone's seen Techspert's videos. I'm like him. I like to use the camera as like a little shelf for my finger and to hold the phone. It works quite well. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind big camera bumps for that reason. And the battery life, as I've mentioned, is very good. I go to bed with between 40 and 60% quite often. I will be doing a full review in the new year once the embargo drops. But sadly, I've got to give it back on the 5th of Jan, I think it is. Yeah, I don't want to give it back. It's just sooner than I...
Just extend it.
Yeah, it's sooner than I thought I was going to have to give it back. But we'll see. I can try and extend it. I will be getting one as part of my Honor Hero role as my seed device anyway, eventually. I don't know when that will be, though.
Oh, another one. Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've got this, that's why I've got the 7 Pro. It's my seed device as part of my Honor Hero role.
Yeah.
So I've still got the 7 Pro, so I might actually do a comparison video as well while I've got the two.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some of the videos of the Magic 8 Pro a few weeks ago now from people that have got hands-on in China, and that slightly different size, the aspect ratio of it, I think is great. Everyone that handles it is saying the same as you. It works better being a bit shorter and not as wide, and it's just a little bit smaller.
Yeah, it's a beautiful size device. It really is. And although it is minuscule difference, it does make a massive difference in the hand and day-to-day use, because it is a bit more cumbersome than the 7 Pro. But talking of videos, just my last thing that I wanted to touch on is I finally hit 500 subscribers, which was my target for this year on my YouTube channel. I mean, it's not a massive number in the grand scheme of things, but I'm very pleased considering I only really started it in March. So it's really good growth. And thank you for everyone that supported me with it, really. It's much appreciated.
Good for you. Yeah, well done.
500 is decent for, 9 months. That's not bad at all from a standing start. Given that it's not your main job, you're not trying to make it your main job.
Yeah, that's the... And you know, Steve, it's a lot of work. Editing even a short video, editing's is a long process. But I enjoy it, so I wouldn't do it unless I enjoyed it.
Very good. Okay, thanks, Joe. Let's leap into the Photo of the Month winner. November's Photo of the Month winner for PSC, as voted for by the lovely members of the PSC Photos group, is Open Sunrise, which was shot on a OnePlus Open by Chris Clayton. And what a cracker it is. Not many arguments from the members. It was a bit of a runaway winner, to be honest. But that doesn't take anything away from the rest, because there's always a good standard. But this one I'll go forward to Photo of the Year, of course. So it was taking the 11th slot. Chris spoke. He also took some photographs very similarly in Camera Creations with other hardware. And we spoke about it on the Camera Creations podcast quite a lot, about what he was doing here. White cliffs and amazing skies and very, very interesting composition. And obviously the members agreed and thought that was good. Steve?
It's a fabulous shot, isn't it? I'm kind of jealous, really. I mean, it just takes dedication. He lives where he lives in that, or moves and travels to that spot, and he gets up at the crack of the dawn, and all the patients are standing there for an hour in the cold shooting this. And I kind of nip out and say a photograph of the sunrise behind an industrial estate or a tree. And it's like, but it's a great shot. It's a wonderful location. It's almost looks too good to be true, as if it's, you know, you've asked AI to have a sunset by the White Cliffs of Dover with some houses in the foreground. But I mean, given that this is real, it's stunning.
You have got that aircraft that you can go and take photographs of.
I have. I'll do that at sunrise.
Joe, any thoughts?
Oh, it's fantastic. With Chris, you can see the thought that he's put into the composition with the chimneys just below the horizon there, and it's just a fabulous shot. And although, like, his camera shots are better, it just shows you what you can do with a mobile device. It's just fantastic.
I really like this particular take on it as well, where the you can see the detail in the cottages in the foreground. He did quite a few of them, and I think he preferred himself the ones where that was kind of silhouetted and it was just a bit different. But I actually quite like this one, and I think that I prefer the lighting on this one. Anyone want to see more on that and deeper dive on that with cameras and not phones, then do join our Camera Creations group and get stuck in. Classifieds is last. If you want to join our Classifieds group, as always, you need to send me an email, as someone did this week, in fact, and made the case for joining, and we let them in. We ask our guest to see if there's anything in there they fancy highlighting. So anything in there, Steve?
I'm going to be cheat slightly. Up there a couple of days ago was Dan Carter, our mobile man Dan, his Pixel Fold original OG at £400, which was an absolute bargain. I thought, shall I get that? Shall I grab that? But he seems to have taken it down. Then he put it up again. Then he took it down again. So clearly he's not quite sure he wants to sell it. If it comes back up on the group, then at that sort of price, then it's a super device still, as we said earlier, in terms of the form factor. It apparently has had a screen protector since new, well looked after. So Dan, if you put it back up, if you still want to get rid of it, I'm sure someone will snap it up at £400 or thereabouts.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a good man, Dan. I think he'll sell if you give him a good offer.
Yeah, good. I'm going to highlight Ashok's Honor Choice Watch. I'm talking about Honor as we are, in white, £50. The proper new price of this is $129.99. And this is one he got part of a promotion. And it looks like it's still sealed. So that's a huge saving. And I like these dumb watches. Not dumb, but smart dumb watches. As I've spoken about the Motorola one at some length on the show. But this one would fit very nicely in with my Honor device and just do a few more things that my Moto Watch won't do because it's using Magic OS as a system. I quite fancy it myself, but if someone wants to get in there first, £50, that's like a £80 saving. So that's my pick. Did you find anything, Joe?
Well, I did, and you won't be surprised. It was the V5, but it's already sold, unsurprisingly.
Oh, is it?
Just shows you how good the classified is, though. A V5 for £695 is a steal, so well done, whoever got that. I think Tunde got it, didn't he? Yeah, well done, Tunde. Well done. But I guess this will make you laugh. I'm going to go for an Apple product again for the second week in a row. There's a 16 Pro Max I saw on there. How much was it going for? 512 in white silver, which is very good looking phone. Apple Care till the 9th of the 2nd. £685. Mm-hmm. That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Good price. Yep. Well done. Okay, so that's the classified group. All sorts of buying and selling going on in there. As I say, drop me an email if you want to join. Thanks ever so much, Steve, for joining us. It's been great to look back and to reminisce and to see Christmas and New Year in with you. Any final thoughts from you?
Well, yes, just to keep supporting and enjoying both the podcasts we've mentioned, this one PSC, which I think you're doing a grand job on, and I look forward to it every fortnight and occasionally more often. So more power to your elbow. I'd love to come back as a guest, maybe sort of spring, summer next year, and we'll have another catch up with me. And until then, I will just carry on enjoying listening.
Great. Thanks very much. And Joe, anything last words from you?
No, just Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yeah. We've got to say that. Merry Christmas, everyone. phoneshowchat.uk is our website, and loads of links in there for PodHub UK and MeWe groups and all of our other audio podcasts in the mix, and also one video podcast, which is the Nomad Tech Project, which we spoke about earlier, where Sam and Joe do their Sunday night thing. So, we'll look forward to bringing you a show in early January, which will be in a fortnight's time. And yeah, one last thing to say from me, really, and from all of us, is thank you so much for your understanding and support in 2025 as we've gone through this change. And we wish you a very happy Christmas and a prosperous 2026. And we hope that you'll keep listening to our show. So thank you very much. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.